This is the Freeman Report with your host, James Freeman, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Tuesday, the 16th of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And if you've just joined me, I've been discussing Biden's weakness on foreign policy and how I think this presents a clear and present danger to the whole world. But I was joined by Basil Valentine, TNT's political editor, for that conversation. And I think we both agree that his abject failure to be able to string a sentence together, to be able to speak on camera, and also the fact that, you know, he just seems to be trying not to upset American voters, the Zionist Israel lobby. The fact the combination of all these things altogether make him a very dangerous person to be in charge of the US at the moment because of the vacuum that it leaves. I also discuss UK immigration and what needs to be done to set us on the right path with Charlie Downs. Charlie put forward a very, very interesting solution to our political problems in the UK. He suggested that maybe bring back the monarchy. I'm not quite so sure that's a great idea. I'm not sure I would want Charlie in charge of the country. Some argue that he is actually in charge of the country, but I definitely wouldn't want him with his hands on the steering wheel. But anyway, it was a really interesting debate to have. If you did miss the first hour of the show, it will be uploaded to the website in the next couple of hours. So if you want to watch that, just head over to tntradio.live and click on the episodes button where you'll be able to watch and listen back to all of my previous shows. Okay, so coming up in the next hour, I'm going to be catching up with my old friend and who now has his own show on TNT. I am, of course, talking about investigative journalist Johnny Vedmore. I'll be asking Johnny to put some context around this current conflict between Israel and Iran. Johnny is fantastic in terms of his knowledge about world events and what's going on underneath what we're told is actually going on. So I'm going to be talking to Johnny all about that in a moment. Then after Johnny, I'll be discussing the third candidate in this year's presidential election race, and asking if the inclusion of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on the ballot could help Trump in his race to become president. Many, I think, would like to see another Kennedy in the White House. And while that looks, I think, very unlikely at the moment, his participation in the race could help determine who is the next president of the United States. To discuss all of this, I'll be joined by Tony Lyons, who is the co-founder of American Values, which is RFK's super PAC in America. Tony is also an attorney and president of independent book publisher Skyhorse Publishing. But before we go over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news, listen up, because there is an awesome music festival taking place in the last bank holiday weekend in May. In the first part of the show, I talked about the Speaker Festival in the first bank holiday. This is a music festival in the Lake District as well, in the second bank holiday of May. Stand in the Light UK Music Festival is being put on as a collaboration between a Stand in the Park and the Light newspaper. The music festival will include 30 awake artists, including Danny Rampling and Mobius Loop, an all-night acoustic fire pit, that sounds absolutely awesome, bouncy castles, and Hope Sussex for the children, plus loads of amazing stalls and scrumptious food vendors. This will all take place in the beautiful Lake District on May the 24th until the 27th. You get 4 days camping and full access to the whole festival for just £60 plus a booking fee, and children under five get in for free. If you want to find out more information, then please visit standinthelight.uk. That's standinthelight.uk. UK. What a great month May is promising to be, if you like, festivals. First, a speakers weekend, followed later in the month by a Freedom Music Festival. Awesome. Now, if you want to get in touch, as always, just email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you fancy joining the conversation as TNT shows go on, get yourself over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society, and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news.
Thank you very much, James. Well, in the last hour, it looked as though police who had kind of stormed this National Conservatism Conference in Brussels, they looked like they were going to let it carry on and let the conference go ahead because it was a very peaceful event, the second one of its kind. But they have shut it down. Nigel Farage has left the building. He's given his speech. Suella Braverman has also given a speech there. But the police are closing it. And Nigel Farage is absolutely disgraceful, disappointing, proved everything that he thought about leaving the EU. But he said he's going to go quietly. The police have arrived at the behest of the mayor, who's dubbed the conference far right and said that there's no place for that in Brussels. So that is a developing story. Suella Braverman herself said it was an attack on free speech. She's had a lot to say as well, leaving the venue there in Brussels. In the UK, a Muslim school, this is a long-running story in the UK, it's reached its conclusion today. A Muslim school that was taken, not a Muslim school, a Muslim pupil, rather, excuse me there, a Muslim pupil who took her school to the High Court to challenge its prayer ban on Islamic prayers. She's lost her fight to get the prayer ban lifted. The judges ruled in the school's favour and said the school was right to impose a ban. The school has come out all guns blazing, I think is probably a good expression, and said that they stick by their ban. They are a secular school, and if they won't be dictated to by one pupil and her mother on their policy, and if people don't like what Michaela School in London stands for, then they don't have to send their children there. Hamza Youssef, First Minister of Scotland, he's been speaking today about his controversial hate crime law. His words, exact words, are that bad actors have made vexatious claims under the new law and using it for their own advantage. There were 7,000 complaints in the first week under the new law. It was launched on April the 1st. Only 240 of those the police have designated hate crimes. Hamza Youssef says that people are using it for their own ends and using it for their own nefarious means. And I think that probably means that a lot of them have complained about him and his speech he made about white people a few weeks ago, as we've discussed on this show. And also moving out of the UK, but only just into Europe, Italian footballer Mattia Gianni has collapsed and died after suffering a heart attack on the pitch on Sunday. It comes on the same day, of course, that Roma player Evan Ndika, he also collapsed with chest pains and had to be taken to hospital on the same day. He's making a recovery, not so much for Mattia Gianni. Tributes have been paid to him today. He was only 26 and he died of a heart attack, James.
Yeah, okay, let's start with that event in Brussels. So why have they shut it down then, Gemma? Is it because basically it's about free speech, they shut it down because it's saying things that they don't like? Or is it because they're saying they didn't have a license or that it's a nuisance? What are the reasons being given by the mayor for shutting it down?
The mayor has said it's because the mayor has dubbed it far right. And has said that that's not welcome. They said they shut it down as a matter of public order and safety, even though there were no reports of any demonstrations outside of the venue. The organisers say it was peaceful, that the police could see as soon as they arrived. It was a peaceful, very, you know, mainstream looking event. You know, people milling around, people up on stage, very well presented event. It looks like a lot of money's been thrown at it. But the mayor has decided it's a matter of public safety. The exact words were the far right is not welcome here, and the police were sent in to close it. Initially, when I last spoke at the last hour, it looked like they weren't going to close it. What they were just saying is nobody was allowed in anymore, and if you left the building while the event was still going on, you wouldn't be allowed to go back in, so it'd be a natural dispersal of the crowd. Now the event has been closed down. Nigel Farage outside spitting feathers, but says he will go quietly, doesn't want a row with the police. No, that would be ridiculous. Suella Braverman saying it is an attack on free speech. The context or content of the, what was being talked about. I mean, the clue's in the name, you know, New Conservatism, a second event of its kind. But conservatism isn't far right necessarily. So it's hard to see what this is a developing story, and I'm not on air after this segment with you. Maybe we'll have more tomorrow. I think this has been generating a lot of headlines in the last hour since we last spoke, because it's a thin end of a very big wedge, isn't it? One person's far right is another person's politics. So where will this end? But certainly it has been closed down by the police, and the crowds are leaving now, Nigel Farage and Suella Braverman among them.
Yeah, I mean, look, there is a real far right, right? And it's, you know, and there's a far left as well. They are the extremists. I wouldn't call Nigel Farage or Suella Braverman extremists. And this is interesting, the timing of this as well, because in, what, less than a month now, we've got the European elections. So if you're watching this in Ireland, in parts of Europe, you know what to do, don't you? Let's vote these woke lefties out, because the European Parliament is absolutely full of them. And, you know, these things that they're doing at the moment, the European Parliament, it does surprise me because, for example, Gemma, they the European Parliament have just voted to this on this immigration bill, to make every country in the European Union take their fair share of immigrants. Hugely unpopular in a lot of countries now, not just Hungary and Poland, but in Ireland and other countries, hugely unpopular. And it, to me, it just shows a lack of political nous, if nothing else, because to do this 6 weeks before the election, they're already expecting a move to the right in those European elections in May. This just stinks of stupidity, to be honest with you, be doing these kind of things a month before the elections. Because what are people going to do? They're going to look at this and they're going to say, right, this is no good. We've got a mayor in Brussels who is shutting down free speech. This is ridiculous. So you know what to do if you're watching this now. Go out and vote. We can't vote in the UK. I'm part of the reason why we can't, because I was part of the Brexit Party and we took the UK out of Europe. Yeah, you need to go out and vote, because these elections are important. And if you don't vote, well, then you get silly governments like in Wales doing 25 mile an hour speed limits. You get them giving, you know, making sanctuary cities and inviting lots of people to the UK. So that's what you get if you don't vote. But yeah, quite shocking this, that this event has been closed down. I'm sure Nigel will have something to say on his show later tonight or tomorrow, whenever he's back. I'll definitely be tuning in to hear what he's got to say, because I'm sure Nigel will have a message to European voters for next month's election. Gemma, thank you for those stories. Look forward to more stories tomorrow. I'm sure we can pick up that story as we learn more about it. To the rest of you, don't go anywhere, because I've got another packed hour for you. My next guest is my old friend, investigative journalist Johnny Vedmore. He's obviously got his own show on TNT now. We're going to be talking about Iran. Johnny is got lots of knowledge about world events and what's behind them and who's behind them. So we're going to be talking about the Middle East in context of this new conflict between Iran and Israel. So don't go anywhere. Stay where you are, right here on TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
Internet.
A stream online.
TNTRadio.live. Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Right. Okay. We're just waiting for Johnny to join. Iran, the Middle East. Johnny is going to be talking and giving some context about the politics of the Middle East. About the who's, the whys, the whens, all the things that we don't get told in by the legacy media. Johnny, I've known Johnny for many years. I first came across him, I think it must have been about 3 years ago during the pandemic. He actually lives not far from me. He lives over in Cardiff. So he came over to a pub near me and I interviewed him. And we talked about all sorts. We talked about Wales, growing up in Wales. We talked about the pandemic, of course, and what's going on there. We talked about the World Economic Forum. And of course, Johnny is famous for all of his articles and his in-depth documentaries on Klaus Schwab, the family's links to the Nazis, his rise to power, and lots of other dubious figures. Johnny, of course, now has his own TNT radio show, which I tune into daily. So we're just trying to get Johnny on now. Hopefully he'll be here in a second. Before he comes on, though, I'm going to talk about that story which Gemma Cooper just brought to us about another footballer dying of a heart attack. When will the authorities start to investigate this? How many more footballers do we have to see collapsing? And not just footballers as well, sports people, basketball players in the US, American football players, lots of other athletes. When are they going to start investigating this? That's what I want to know, because this is absolutely ridiculous now. It really is. When you look at the numbers, this isn't normal. This isn't normal. When you look at football matches over the last couple of years, if there's not somebody collapsing on the football field, then generally we've seen people collapsing in the stands, spectators. Matches have had to be stopped while ambulances get in and medical attention is given to people. When are the football authorities going to start investigating what went on? I think that's long overdue now. It's clear that lots of athletes were forced to have the jab. I think it's absolutely reprehensible that, you know, we haven't seen any investigations into this. I think, you know, there might be good reasons why people at the time high up in football believe that it was the right thing to do to give lots of footballers the jab. But I think the evidence now shows it was a mistake, and it's about time people actually started to speak up about this. I know Matt Letizia is, but it's about time we started to see people who are currently in charge of football actually doing something. Right, okay, I'm delighted. I'm looking at Johnny Vedmore is right in front of me. I'm delighted that he's going to join me. We're going to be talking all about the Middle East. Hello, Johnny. How are you doing?
No, I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me on. Nice to see you again.
And Johnny, have you recovered yet from our weekend monkey business?
No, no. I had a face like a marshmallow for 2 days, and I'm still just about recovering now.
Yeah, fantastic. Johnny, I didn't get you in to talk about that. Tell us about, so I've been talking today with Basil Valentine, our political editor, about the Biden administration and the fact that Joe Biden being so weak a president actually puts the whole world in danger, I think, because of the vacuum that it's created. We were talking, of course, about his response to Iran, his response to Israel, or lack of it, I should say. But let's talk about the context of this current conflict. There's a lot of history between Iran and Israel. And Johnny, I'm relying on you to tell us what's really going on instead of what the legacy media like to tell us. So give us some history, Johnny, about this current conflict.
Yeah, I think what people have to realize is that Iran and America have been at war for a long time. They've been at war since probably about 1953. And the overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh by the CIA in only the second major coup that the CIA enacted in the world after the previous coup the year before, which had been King Farouk of Egypt. From that moment on, Iran was really under the control of different Western powers by the influence of different leaders they were in up until, of course, the Islamic Revolution. And even then, what we get given is this sort of like a story, this idea that, oh, then along came these evil Islamic fundamentalists who came in and America no longer had power and Britain no longer had power. Well, as soon as they got in, they were actually, the American intelligence were in constant contact with General Mandani, with Pasandida, and with others during 1979-1980, and they were organizing what was called the October Surprise, which saw Jimmy Carter ousted from office and George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan take power. And that was a coup on America, and it was done by offering the Iranians a load of arms. So a load of weapons to be able to hold those hostages until after the election, so that then, you know, or after the October, so that the October surprise would happen and the election would swing the other way. And it was successful. It was a coup on America, and it was the Islamic State of Iran working alongside the CIA. So a lot of what we get told about Iran is all smoke and mirrors. And of course, over the years since America has concentrated on the Middle East with wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, with their bombing of Syria, etc., Iran have been looking on with very skeptical eyes and been accusing America of what we all know America does, which is basically overthrow other sovereign powers and install their own governments or their own people in charge. So we're now at a point where when I see this sort of stuff happen today, I think, well, is this more of them communicating behind the scenes and pretending? Is this more of a narrative creation? Is this more of just the same old game America and Iran have played together? Or is this something else? So, you know, that's basically like the brief history of America and Iran and their sort of like complicated relationship. Doesn't mean that they're friends. Just because they've done the same things in the past, they've worked together in the past, doesn't mean that they're friends. But it certainly doesn't look like they're enemies. And I think what we saw by the strikes that happened and what happened recently is that Iran still is an extremely powerful player in the region, possibly the most powerful player, maybe only next to Saudi Arabia, but they have completely different a completely different feel about them, and what they do is completely different. But I think, yeah, I think what we're seeing now is Iran fire a shot across the bow, and it's been coming for ages. I mean, everybody knew that it was going to be coming.
Yeah, and the attack, you know, politicians, including David Cameron, are kind of coming out and saying, well, it was all a big failure, really. I didn't take it as that. I mean, I looked at the messaging coming out of Iran before the attack. They said they were going to retaliate, but they said they're going to do it in a way that didn't escalate things. For me, the significance of what Iran did was the message it sent, which was, you know, we are not afraid to launch attacks from Iranian soil directly on Israel. That's what that said to me. And it was a message rather than actually, you know, sending over slow drones, which they knew were going to be shot down. What are your thoughts on that, Johnny?
Yeah, completely. I think there's an even bigger message come out of this. I think this is, it's election year. The Iranians know fully well that the American establishment and the British establishment do not want to get involved in anything on election year, do not want escalation. Whoever's in power will get the brunt of the responsibility for that escalation happening, especially when you look at Genocide Joe, as Trump calls him, being the opponent to Trump. Trump had made himself as a peacemaker for the Americans while he was in doing his first term. And that's a really important sort of spin that's got to be factored in. They don't want, the Iranians know that there's very it wasn't going to be a reaction. It wasn't going to be escalation. It wasn't going to be a military conflict. So Iran haven't only shown that, look, you attack us and we'll attack you, but you attack us, we'll attack you, and you won't respond. That's an even bigger message.
Yeah, absolutely, Johnny. Johnny, we're going to go to the news headlines now. When we come back, I'd like to get your take, sort of zooming out a little bit on this conflict, of why you think it's happening. There's a lot of questions. We've kind of moved on, but there were a lot of questions, and I don't think they've been answered, about how this attack was able to happen. There's lots of people like myself who think actually the Israelis knew damn well this attack was coming and they let it happen because it gave them justification to do what they're doing now. I've got my own ideas on potentially why Israelis would have wanted to have done that, the Israeli government rather would have wanted to do that. But I'm really keen to hear your take on why you think this is going on in Gaza now. So we'll do that conversation right after this short break on TNT.
TNT Radio News.
Big news!
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called for a maximum restraint amidst escalating tensions in the Middle East, warning that the region is on the brink of a full-scale war following Iran's drone and missile strike on Israel. Former President Donald Trump's legal team has requested a postponement of his Florida classified documents case due to his commitment to a separate trial in New York, where he's accused of falsifying business records during the 2016 presidential campaign.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, this is TNT Radio.
Right. Okay, Johnny. So, yeah, as I was saying before the break, I never pretend to know for sure. I think anybody who does that is a conspiracy theorist, but I do ask questions and I do have kind of hypotheses, let's put it like that. And I think this whole Middle East thing in Gaza, I think the Israelis knew damn well. We heard from Egyptian diplomats that they actually warned Israel that this is being planned a week before it happened. How those flimsy, paragliders that travel at, you know, really slow speeds, which I'm sure if you've got as any kind of weapon are easy to shoot out of the sky, how they were able to come across the wall and the wall be penetrated in so many different places. None of it makes any sense at all. So I think Israel allowed this to happen so that it could conduct this war. I think it has a lot to do with the trillions of cubic feet of gas off of Gaza, which actually belongs to the Palestinians, which the Israeli want to get their hands on, and also the planned canal that the Israeli want to build to compete with the Suez Canal. They basically want to deliver gas from those fields to Europe, which obviously now has got its own problems with energy supplies. That's my thoughts. That's the most obvious hypothesis I can think of to explain what's going on. But Johnny, what do you think?
Well, I see this shrinking of the map. The Palestine as a country has shrunk over and over again. If you were to play Palestine 1947, 1948, and you were to play it year by year, second by second, what you would see is that Palestine's shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And we're at an end game here. We're at a point where there's not much more it can shrink. Gaza is extremely good beachfront property for the Israelis. I mean, that is one of the big things. They really want to find another solution for where to put these Gazans so that they can take the land completely and it can be Israel from the river to the sea, which is also something that Israel like to consider as well, owning all of the land. And we see in the West Bank, it infiltrated, dotted with settlements all over it. The occupation is in full flow, and we are not at the beginning. We're not in the middle. We're at the end game. If they push any more, there will be no Palestine left, and they will forever have that land if it continues the way it's continuing.
Do you think, and this might be a silly question, but do you think the international community are going to allow Israel? I mean, look, you know, this conflict is going on and there's lots of voices around the world calling Israel out. They're currently holed up in the ICJ at the moment, the International Court of Justice, on charges of genocide. But in the main, they're being allowed to get on with it. But if what you're saying is true and literally Gaza is wiped off the face of the earth, which, let's be honest, they have bombed it. They've literally flattened most of Gaza. So they poisoned the ground. They made it impossible to farm there. So it's difficult to see how this can be rebuilt. But do you think the international community is just going to allow Israel in its current format to exist if it's clear in, I don't know, 5-10 years time that actually genocide has been committed?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think that the international community has got not only blood on its hands, I think the international community is covered in blood and does exactly the same every single time. It does not care about people. It does not care about justice. It does not care about life. It does not care about people committing genocide if those people are on the side of the rest of the international community. We are heading to a road where we will look back and our ancestors will look back and say, well, how was that allowed to happen? But in the same way, it'll be a thing of the past. It'll be a thing of history. 10 years after Palestine's gone, it'll start to be a figment of the imagination. This is a very biblical thing that we're watching happen. Whether you're religious or not, the Israelis came in and they ousted the Canaanites. In the Bible, it says they killed every single one of them. And that wasn't so much the truth, because as we know from genetics and from testing genetics, that 50 to 80% of the Palestinians are actually from Canaanite ancestors, and 50 to 60% of the Israelis are also from Canaanite ancestors. So they did not get rid of the Canaanites, but it's a promise that they made that they're continuing to do. They're trying to make it just about one people, and the international community is all down with it. They love the idea of where this is going, because this is just, this is a model. What we're watching is a model of what will happen in other countries too. So the importance for why we have to stop this is because the destruction of territory like we see in eastern Ukraine means the rebuilding by AI and by new technologies and 15-minute cities, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100% with everything you said there, Johnny. But let's just say we can stop Israel from doing this, and there is a viable kind of rebuilding effort for the Palestinians. What's the solution long term, though? Because lots of politicians are now saying that it's impossible. The two-state solution is now impossible. You've got too many Israeli settlers on Palestinian land, and actually the land that's left is unmanageable in terms of Palestinians having their own state. So, you know, I guess we can argue about all the wrongs, the rights and the wrongs, and mostly wrongs about what's happened. But I think at the end of the day, politicians would say that, you know, we are where we are. So what is the solution going forward?
We're playing a game where we're saying that if the Israelis take land it is theirs forever afterwards. And that is a ridiculous game to play. That's a game that sees a tyrant always win. The occupied territory must be returned to the Palestinians. The Israelis who live there must leave the land they're occupying, and there must be a new way forward. What that looks like, who knows, but it's only going to be, at the moment, in the road we're going, it's only going to happen one way, and that's through death and destruction.
Let's put aside, like, actually whether it will happen or not, and let's talk about the feasibility of that, though, because, you know, I don't have the figures in front of me, but it's a lot of people now that are settled on Palestinian land. I think it's tens, if not hundreds of thousands, that are there. How do you go about solving that? Because Israel isn't going to agree to that. There's no chance in hell. Israel, although it hasn't declared itself a nuclear state, we know it's got nuclear weapons. How would you, if you were as a politician, Johnny, and I know you probably never will be because it is a horrible world and you have to let go of your integrity and all of that to become a politician, I believe, in the way the world is today. But, you know, how would you solve that? What do we do? Do we send armies into Israel and force them?
I don't think it's us who will be sending armies into Israel, but I think armies will end up in Israel. And the Israelis already have the Samson option, which, of course, Seymour Hersh wrote about, if I'm correct, that it was Seymour Hersh who wrote the book. But basically, those nuclear bombs are not, they're not aimed at Arabic states. They're aimed at Europe. They're aimed at us. They're aimed at Britain, they're aimed at Germany, they're aimed all around, so that we know that if we don't stop them from being taken over by the hordes, the angry hordes that will come upon them eventually, that they will destroy us. That type of scenario can't be left to happen. So I think the West has also got to realize they're being blackmailed, they're being forced into doing a certain thing, and they need to also do something drastic before it gets to the point where it's a complete, I mean, can you imagine if there was a joint Arabic assault on Israel nowadays and Israel was taken? Can you imagine where that leads? I mean, it's horrific.
Yeah, it is. But Johnny, I think you'll agree. We are obviously had a lot of conversations on the weekend. You know, this idea that the UK is separate to Israel and America is separate to Israel is just a big fallacy, isn't it, really? Because, you know, Israel is extremely powerful in America with its lobby. Of course, you know, lobby groups like AIPAC, which, by the way, should be registered as a foreign agent. They're not, which means that the Israeli government essentially can give lots of money to US politicians. But we also know Israel has got all of its fingers and tentacles in UK politics as well. So yeah, it's a very, very complicated situation, not one I think that is going to be solved anytime soon. But I do agree with you, Johnny. And I think Ofer Kassif, the Israeli MP, when he was on this show, what he said, because he constantly gets called out for speaking out against Israel, but he says, I'm not speaking out against Israel when I call for a ceasefire and a two-state solution. I'm speaking up for Israel because, you know, if Israel carries on down this path, nobody's going to win. There is no winner to this game. And I think Ofer is right. And I think you're right, Johnny. Johnny Vedmore, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Johnny, for coming on the Freeman Report. Good luck with your show this afternoon. Tell everybody when your show is.
Yeah, I'm on 5 to 7 drive time noon over on the East Coast. It's going to be a good one. I full up with ladies today, really powerful ladies. Looking forward to it.
Fantastic. So, yes, definitely tune in to Johnny at 5 o'clock today. Thank you, Johnny Vedmore. Right. Thanks. Okay, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I'm going to be joined by the co-founder of American Values, which is RFK Jr.'s super PAC. His name is Tony Lyon. So we're going to have a really interesting conversation on RFK and the US presidential elections. Don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
I'm Cal Fire Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying, by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. To learn more, visit nature.org today.
Not see it coming. It's prediabetes, and it captures one in three adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1 minute prediabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
It's been said that when someone you love has Parkinson's, you have Parkinson's. The truth is, Parkinson's disease doesn't just affect the diagnosed. It affects everyone who supports and helps care for them. Worldwide, over 10 million people are living with Parkinson's, a neurological disease that affects movement. And with so many places to search for information, it can be difficult to know where to begin. The Parkinson's Foundation has answers. Answers for everyone in the fight. We can help you understand the disease, help you find expert care, give you tips for living a better life, share the latest research, help you find local support, and there's a free helpline you can call. Find your answers and join us in the fight against Parkinson's. To learn more, please go to Parkinson.org or call 1-800-4PD-INFO. The Parkinson's Foundation. Better lives together.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
The conversation continues with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right, okay. We're just waiting for my next guest to connect. So while we're doing that, I'm just looking at the new UK newspapers at the moment. Just looking at that event in Brussels, I didn't realise that Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban was scheduled to appear tomorrow. Absolutely incredible scenes there, that the mayor of the city is basically banning a political event. Suella Braverman, a UK MP, she was a former Home Office Minister, Secretary of State, rather, for the Home Office in the UK. And we've now got Prime Minister Viktor Orban, and we've got the Mayor of Brussels saying that it's a far-right event and sending the police in. Absolutely extraordinary scenes there. Right, okay, I think my guest has just connected. Tony Lyon, co-founder of American Values, which is RFK's super PAC. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Tony.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining me. Let's start with the campaign. Obviously, we've got the presidential elections this year. There are many, I think, that would like to see another Kennedy in the White House. How is this campaign going, Tony?
I think it's going great. You know, the DNC has this sort of war room, and they've got, you know, $3 billion that they've raised to try to do things like keep Bobby Kennedy off the ballot, to try to censor him, to try to get people to vilify him in the press. But he's doing really, really well. He's crisscrossing the country. He's got 60,000 volunteers helping him get on the ballot in state after state. So I think it's going to really work well. And I think there's no stopping him now.
How many states is he going to be on the ballot, though?
I think he's going to get on the ballot in every state and the District of Columbia. And that's his plan now. And he's got it worked out. And he's got this whole team focused on it. And I think that you're going to see every 3 or 4 days that he's gotten on the ballot in a new state.
That's really good news, because I think it's you know, a real disaster for democracy. And I know that the Democrats have been up to all sorts of antics. Tell us some of the things that they've been doing using lawfare to try and stop him getting on the ballot.
Yeah, so they've brought claims with the FEC. They're writing letters to the, you know, each state, trying to find technicalities that will keep Bobby off the ballot. And then they're going after voters and sort of telling them stories about Bobby that aren't true. So they're saying that he's an anti-vaxxer, that he's a conspiracy theorist, that he's a racist, that he's an anti-Semite. And of course, nobody wants to vote for somebody where all of those things are true. But the facts are that they're just not true, and that this is just sort of part of their bag of tricks. And they think that they can fool voters, not focus on the real issues that matter to them, and just try to make them, you know, coronate Joe Biden rather than elect him, you know, rather than have a real fair and open process.
Yeah, it's pretty despicable stuff from the Democrats. Obviously, we're seeing similar things with Trump. We've seen the court case in New York, and now we've seen another criminal case with Stormy Daniels' case at the moment. It seems the you know, the Biden administration and the Democrats have been very, very busy this year in terms of lawfare. In terms of RFK, who are his main supporters? Does he have a demographic in the US which are particularly supportive of him?
Yeah, so if the election only included people under 45 years old, he would win today. He's beating both Trump and Biden in that demographic. So that's an incredible thing. I mean, it started out about 3 months ago. It was anybody under 35. He's gained 10 years. So what he needs to do now is get to baby boomers. And that's really difficult in a system where the media is so controlled, you know, in, you know, mainstream television. So the people who get their news from podcast, those people know Bobby Kennedy, have seen him many, many times. They trust him. They see that he's honest, that he has integrity, and they're ready to vote for him now.
And what's the turnout like for that demographic? Because in the UK, for example, you know, the elections really are decided by the older population. Obviously, we have also got a little bit of an imbalance in terms of the split between young and old people these days across many countries. But in the UK, lots of young people, they create a lot of noise about what they want and what they don't want and their dissatisfaction and disillusion with politics. But then come election day, they don't come out and vote. What's the situation in the US?
So I think that this time people are going to come out and vote, because you've got these incredible stats where you've got 70% of the American population would rather vote for somebody other than Trump or Biden. You know, and then there's so many young people who are having trouble paying for food and gas and mortgages. You've got poverty up by 12% in less than a year and a half. So, you know, things are really bad. And I think people recognize that they have a president now where 60% of them don't think that he's mentally capable of running the country. So you've got a big incentive for young people to come out and vote. And they see kind of a kindred spirit in Bobby Kennedy. And they see somebody who's a real Democrat, sort of, you know, Joe Biden now doesn't really represent the Democratic values of Bobby's uncle and his father. And Bobby Kennedy yeah. really does. So he's anti-war. He's pro-free speech. He wants to protect the border, which, you know, is getting to be such a big issue now. And, you know, but more than that, he really cares about the middle class and they feel that. And he really cares about young people and they feel that. So I think that you're going to see incredible turnout.
Yeah. And what's so overall, I think in the election at the moment, anyway, there's a lot of, you know, sort of 6-7 months is a long time, particularly with world events at the moment. But at the moment, we're being told that it is the economy and immigration, which are the two big issues for Americans. Is that so for those that are under 45, or are we seeing different issues come to the top of the fold?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're really concerned about their ability to sort of pay off their college debt, to actually own a home, you know, and to have some kind of bright future. And so many young people now are, you know, in this terrible spot where they don't see that they're going to be able to own a home. They don't see they're ever going to be able to pay their debts. They look at the inflation rates and they, you know, really don't feel that anybody cares. That they're in such a bad spot. And I think that that's what they really see with Bobby Kennedy, somebody who's healthy, somebody who's inspiring, you know, somebody where they're not just going to vote for the lesser of two evils. They're going to vote for somebody who they can really believe in, who's going to change the country, who's not owned by a handful of gigantic corporations.
Yeah, that is really interesting, actually, the 70% of Americans, I'm not surprised, would rather have someone other than Biden and Trump to vote for. But do you think there is a realistic chance that we could see Kennedy get to the White House? I mean, look, we've already talked about the fact that Trump is in court. Who knows what's going to happen there? I mean, he could be sent to prison and not be able to run the election. What is the realistic, you know, first of all, I guess, is there a possibility of him getting in? And if so, what do you think is that route to the White House for Robert?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the big obstacles that he has is that a lot of people think that he can't win. And that's by design. You know, that's what the, you know, one of the DNC talking points is that, you know, he's a stalking horse for Donald Trump. And, you know, while he's defended Donald Trump, you know, when the DNC, you know, had him taken off the ballot in Maine and Colorado, Bobby Kennedy stood right up and he said, "We live in a democracy. I don't want to win an election by keeping my opponent off the ballot." So I think that his path is that he's a sincere candidate. He's actually polling really well in the swing states. And those are the states where people get involved and think about politics early. So there's a poll from Michigan where he was at 27% to Donald Trump and Joe Biden's 33 or 34%. And the margin of error there is 4.5%. So he only needs to take a couple of points from each of them to actually win the state of Michigan. And the same was true in Arizona. So, you know, while nationally his polling is, you know, still, you know, under 20% in these key swing states, he's really doing well and doesn't have to make a lot of progress. And that's in the face of just incredible censorship, just hundreds of millions of dollars been thrown at trying to make the American people not understand that he's exactly the candidate who they want, that, you know, those 70% who want somebody different, they want somebody with honesty, integrity, and character. And that's Bobby Kennedy.
And you mentioned the M word, money. Of course, that's incredibly important in US politics. You know, in the UK here, we see caps on the amount MPs can spend on election campaigns. And there's lots of restrictions in the US. It's all about who's got the most money. How is Bobby doing on the money front?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating subject because Joe Biden gave a speech in 2022 where he said that the biggest threat to democracy in America was just that we're inundated with this money coming from big corporations, from special interests. And yet he is the perpetrator of that problem. I mean, he's the one creating it. So the New York Times had a story last week that he's raised, you know, like I said, $3 billion, and that he's going to use that $3 billion to try to change the outcome, to try to rig the outcome, to make it impossible for an opponent of his to actually win. So Bobby Kennedy's raised decent money. He's got enough money to get himself on the ballot in all the states. And we, as the outside super PAC, have raised something like $35 million. And we're using that to run advertisements to convince people that they've been lied to about who Bobby Kennedy is, and to encourage them to see him as the kind of folk hero outsider that I think he is.
Well, listen, I don't know what's going to happen in the election. I don't think anybody does, and a lot could change between now and then. But I certainly would like to see the race opened up to somebody else apart from just Trump and Biden. Like many Americans, I believe that really, I mean, I prefer Trump over Biden, but I think it'd be much better to get somebody else. So thank you very much, Tony Lyon, for that fantastic insight on RFK. Right, that's me done for today, but don't go anywhere. We've got Johnny Vedmore coming up. We've got other shows right here on TNT.